Welcome to Hack the Entrepreneur, the show which reveals the fears, habits, and inner battles behind big-name entrepreneurs and those on their way to joining them. Now here is your host, John Naster.
Hey, hey, this is Hack the Entrepreneur. Thank you so much for joining me again today. I am your host, John Naster, but you can call me Johnny. My guest today is a true serial entrepreneur with 17 plus years experience in the startup world. From struggling to get his first business off the ground at 19 years old to selling his second company for $10 million at the young age of 26. He has since started, shut down, and pivoted on more businesses than I can count, and he's now driven by both profit and purpose. He is currently the founder and CEO of Empire, a fast-growing online-to-offline marketing platform. Now, let's hack John Carter. Have you ever considered starting your own business or launching a startup? My guess is the answer is yes, but if it is yes, then you're probably going to want a great logo design, as well as business cards and a website. I've got a treat for you. This is where DesignCrowd.com can help. Here's how it works. First, you visit DesignCrowd.com and you post a brief describing the design that you need. For example, let's say a brand new logo. Then DesignCrowd will then open your project to their 550,000 plus designers to respond. Next, within hours, you'll receive your first design, and over the course of 3 to 10 days, a typical project will receive 60 to over 100 different designs from designers from all over the world. Last, all you have to do is then pick the best design, and the designer gets paid. If you don't find a design you want, no problem. DesignCrowd has an absolute money-back guarantee for you. Crowdsourcing design on DesignCrowd helps you access the collective creativity of hundreds of thousands of designers and will save you money, time, and help you find the best design possible for your budget. Check out designcrowd.com/hack. That's DesignCrowd, designcrowd.com/hack. And you'll get up to $100 off your very first project. We are back with another episode of Hack the Entrepreneur. And today we have a very, very special guest. John, welcome to the show.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Absolutely my pleasure, man. Absolutely my pleasure. I think we're going to have a lot of fun.
Let's do it.
Yeah, let's do it. All right, John, as an entrepreneur, can you tell me what is the one thing that you do that you feel has been the biggest contributor to your successes so far?
Yeah, so I love that you start with this like really heavy question. It's great. Because there's so many things. So to pick the number one thing was really interesting. But I think it comes down to resilience, as we were talking a little bit before the show. Like, I've been doing this entrepreneur ride for about 17 years now, started when I was 19. And there's been so many near-death experiences, it's almost hard to keep track of them all, you know, where we're running out of money in 2 weeks or 4 weeks or a couple months, or you know, sort of bouncing off the bottom, raising money just in time, or getting that deal that we needed just in time. And it's really hard during those dark times to not just give up. I've been through pivots. In fact, the last company that I'm sure we'll talk about, Empire, is a pivot from a previous company, which was a pivot from a previous company before that. And I think anytime you're going through these changes in what the company does, it gets really scary. There's usually a period of flat revenue, can last years in some cases while you're kind of building the new tech. And you've just got to have this like resilience level to keep going through all of that pain. I love how Elon Musk put it. It's like eating glass and staring into the abyss of death. Like, you're doing all this really painful work that you don't want to do. Like, you'd rather just be, I don't know, working a regular job or something to that effect, because it's really hard and you're usually working crazy hours and it's really stressful. And then you know you could, this whole thing could go away and, you know, just a couple months or even a couple weeks at some points. So resilience is that key strategy that I think is really important. And to go one level deeper, so just to say, yeah, resilience is what makes me different, I think is hard to grasp. The reason there's resilience there is the why behind I get out of bed in the morning. the reason why I do this and in many cases, you know, suffer quite a bit is because I really truly believe that I was given some talents that weren't really, I didn't really earn them, right? Like your intelligence level, you're born with it, your certain skills and certain talents, you just kind of come out of the womb, where you're born, all of this stuff. A lot of it is sort of a nature. There is some nurture in there too, but you're just sort of gifted this. And I think if you have certain talents, you got to use them for the betterment of mankind. I could just go and sold a company, you know, a few companies ago, I could just go and surf all day on the beach in Costa Rica and maybe work on some small little marketing project to make some extra cash part time and live what would be considered a pretty good life. But there's something like that. There's just like this guilt inside of me or something. But I feel like I'm wasting away some really good talents. And I feel much more happy and fulfilled when I'm actually just chasing down a really big dream that I think will impact a lot of people's lives in a very positive way and create a lot of jobs, which will help the economy. When I'm making that kind of impact, that's when I'm happiest and that's when I'm the most fulfilled. So I have that why. I really truly understand it. And it drives me to be able to go through a lot of suffering and go through a lot of pain because I know that I'm doing what I'm supposed to be doing. So it's kind of a long answer, but that's what I think separates me from others that I see kind of giving up or maybe not pushing themselves quite as hard.
Yeah. And it's a great answer. And I like the two parts. So the resilience and then sort of your why. So let's talk about this why. Because does this why have to mean like that you want to start a not-for-profit and, you know what I mean? And just sort of like change the world in some way like that? Or does it mean something else?
Yeah. So it could be a nonprofit. It just depends. It's really more about the positive impact. So in many cases, a nonprofit's positive impact will be fairly small because they have to raise money for every kind of impact that they want to have, right? Whereas a regular business, you can, if you have an income stream, like for example, like a Tom's Shoes, you know, where you buy a shoe and then they donate a shoe, like you've got an income stream, you don't have to ask for money and you're making a tremendous impact by you know, in his case, it's donating shoes. You know, for me, the impact doesn't have to necessarily be charitable too. Look, people need jobs. Every job you create is a positive impact on that person's life. And I don't think that should ever be taken for granted because there's plenty of people around the world that don't have jobs who would love an entrepreneur to create a business that creates a job for them. So I think jobs are absolutely a big positive impact. You can also have far-fetched dreams like Elon Musk, which he wants to get, you know, get people multi-planetary and get us off of fossil fuels and things like that. I'm not quite at that ambitious of a level. I'm somewhere in between where what I feel like what drives me is profits and purpose. Like if you're going to build a company that's not a charitable organization, you have to have profits because otherwise you won't survive. And all of those jobs you create and all that work you put in will go away. So you've got to focus on profits. But at the same time, if you can have a really good purpose where you're making a difference in the world, obviously you're creating jobs, as I mentioned, but maybe you're also creating a product that brings joy to people's lives or helps make their life easier in some ways. And there's a million different ways that can do that. Like for us, I'll give you our example specifically. So at Empire, where it might not be as clear. So at Empire, we are a card-linked offers platform. And what that means is if you're going to earn a reward, like at a restaurant or a grocery store, or anything like maybe get some cash back or points for an airlines, typically, you've always had to use these punch cards, buy 10, get one free kind of things, or maybe it's a loyalty card, or maybe it's a coupon, get 10% off. Or nowadays, a lot of apps, you have to show the app to the server. And we've sort of gotten rid of all that friction and said, look, all you have to do actually is just pay the way you already pay. So you've got debit and credit cards in your wallet, just use them to pay. The data's there and you'll get your reward automatically. You don't have to show anything. You don't have to do anything like that. And that may seem like, well, that looks like a for-profit business. And what real impact does that really have besides making it easier to earn rewards? Well, what we've done with that is yes, we've built a profitable business. We work with companies like Yelp, who has just deployed Yelp Cashback, and that's powered on our platform. And we're talking to some of the biggest tech companies in the world. And I think that, you know, that will make good money and benefit their users because their users love sort of the frictionlessness. But then on sort of the side, what you don't see all the time, but you'll see on the website is, we've also worked with charitable organizations. And what we've done with them is we've created this platform. It's the same platform like Yelp uses, but in their case, it helps them raise money. So we've got about 10,000 businesses in the US that are on the platform today, meaning they are giving some kind of offer if you just pay with a regular debit and credit card. And typically that's like 10% cash back, right? So we've got thousands and thousands of restaurants, for example, that offer 10% cash back. A charity can go and offer these way to donate to their members. And basically all their members do is go to the website, they link up a debit or credit card, and then they walk into any one of these participating businesses. They just buy like normal. They don't have to say anything. They don't have to do anything. They buy like normal. And 2 seconds later, they get an alert from the charity that says, hey, you just donated $8 for spending $80 at that sushi restaurant. And that's all powered by us. We do all the tech work and everything for the charity. So it's really kind of plug and play. They just say, you know, yeah, I want to run a program. And it's sort of up and running, sort of white label version of it pretty quickly. And so there's potentially tens of thousands of charities that we want to be able to give them a way to raise money that's really easy and effortless and could make a really positive impact in many people's lives. So that's not the entirety of our business. That's one channel that we focus on. We also focus on tech companies, as I mentioned. We work with banks, we work with airlines, but that piece of the business is really quite feel good. And I think, you know, most businesses can figure out a way to add an element of feel good that really does make a positive impact outside of, again, just even having a good business that creates job is a positive impact, but sometimes you can add that icing on too.
So that's kind of the differentiation I want to make, that I don't think it necessarily has to be that direct impact to like a not-for-profit or a charity. And I love that it's part of your business, but I mean, you are inherently with Empire, you're trying to make both like owners of restaurants and stores and things lives easier, but also the customers' lives easier.
That's right.
That's having an impact, right?
Yeah. You know, one of the things that we do that I think is a good exercise to kind of like show that impact is we talk about all the people we affect. And, you know, the charities is the obvious one, you know, like allowing them to raise money is very, you know, a positive impact. But we also talk about consumers. So consumers, we're making it easier to raise or to save money. We actually say one of our mottos is we want to make earning rewards as effortless as breathing. And that's literally what we do, because it's so easy once you link up a card to, you know, one of these tech companies or one of the charities. Sometimes you'll buy and you didn't even know that merchant was on, and you'll get your reward instantly. So just like breathing, it happens sometimes without thinking, most of the time without thinking. So that's very cool and very beneficial to consumers. They're going to save a lot of money, and saving money is really important. They can spend that on having a better quality of life. The merchants is another constituent that we make a positive impact in. We drive in tons and tons of new customers to them, and we keep their existing customers coming back, and we prove to them how much we do in that regard. Like for merchants, if you want to advertise on sites, I don't know, like Yelp, you're usually paying per click or per impression. If you're a restaurant owner, you have no idea how much sales you're actually generating in your offline store, right? Because you buy a click online and then you can't track it through to the purchase. But on our platform, you can. So you'll be able to see how many impressions you got on Yelp, and then you'll be able to see how much revenue you generated in your store. And you only pay us for the revenue that was generated. So I think that's very beneficial to the merchants. It helps them grow their business, and it helps them hopefully become more profitable and hire more people and expand and all that good stuff. And then we have a fourth constituent, which is either the tech companies, banks, airlines. We call these people publishers. These are the companies that will showcase these offers out to their consumers, and the consumers will link up their card on their website or app and then, you know, go and make purchases and earn rewards. And those publishers win because they give a really cool product to their consumers. They also make a little bit of money off of each transaction that occurs. So it's a new revenue stream for them as well, which again could help their business grow, help them hire more people and be beneficial there. So we've got all four of those groups. We put them up on a big TV on our wall. I talk about them every other week at our company, you know, all hands meeting. And we try to make sure that that's always top of mind, because I really like, as an entrepreneur, like I'm super driven by the impact that it makes on those four. But it's really challenging to get the employees all super fired up about that as well, because they're not all wired exactly the same. Like I could stay up, you know, for 365 days a year, get like 4 hours of sleep, and I'm like totally cool with that and make no money in the process. Totally cool with that because I know that there's this really cool end game in place. But I think you have to work a little bit harder to get people that may be more motivated by the paycheck that they're going to get to make sure they can pay for their kids' college right now, which is really expensive. So they're like very short-term focused. And absolutely no fault of theirs. I mean, I would be too if I was in that exact situation. So you really kind of have to bring it up a lot, I think, to get people to see, wow, there is this really cool long-term sort of big vision play here, as well as the fact that I need to do my job and get paid well enough to be able to, you know, pay for my kids' college education.
So we're talking to, like, today we're talking to John Carter, the entrepreneur who has been at this game for over 17 years. You've started a ton of companies. You've exited some successfully, others maybe not. I'm not sure how they all fell out. And now you're running another company. But would this idea of impact and making sure that it's like profits and purpose in your business, when you, or if you step back 17 years to the first business you started, was that still there? Or is this something that's evolved sort of over this almost two decades?
That's another really good question. Candidly, it was not there when I started. And I actually started, I'll never forget, the first time I got the idea to run my own company. And I thought, like, that the reason I did it was because I was surfing and there was like this lull in the waves. And I looked back at shore and there was just, you know, mansions pretty much on most oceans in Southern California where I grew up, as far as the eye can see. And, you know, my parents sort of, we grew up 20, 30 minutes inland, never really had a ton of money. We were okay. We got by, but it was sort of like middle class, lower middle class maybe. And I was like, man, I want to be on the beach. Like, that would be amazing to live there and surf all the time. So I was really motivated by material things and by money when I got started. And that's why my earlier businesses really only had profits. They didn't really have impact besides the job creation, which again, I think is a great impact. So, you know, I was motivated by money and it was really interesting to see kind of how I behaved back then. The change didn't happen for me until I sold my second business and I got a pretty good exit out of it. It was a bootstrap company and we were helping people find good rates on home loans on the internet, which again had some impact to it. And when I sold it, I decided to go to Indonesia and surf and who knows, maybe, you know, sort of quasi retire. And even just a few weeks on the beach in Indonesia, sort of surfing a lot and not working a lot, not really having a business idea that I was really passionate about, I got sort of that epiphany, which was, wow, I actually really love the process of building companies. And why do I love that? And I kind of dug in a little deeper and it was like, well, because I feel like I'm fairly decent at it. I've got some talent, but I'm developing that talent. And as I develop it and I get better and better, that makes me feel really fulfilled. And then I dug a little deeper. Why does that make me fulfilled? Because the impact that starts to create on the people around me, the world, the people, my team members that I hire, the customers that we work with, et cetera. So really all, when you kind of boil it down, comes down to that impact. And I sort of made this decision, like sitting on the beach in the middle of nowhere in Indonesia, that like, wow, that's what makes me happy. And that's my purpose. That's what I'm supposed to be working on. And ever since then, it's always been about both profits and purpose.
Right. But it's just a long sort of evolutionary process. I think most people get into business for the money initially. Like you're trying to like, I think our validation comes from the money at first. And then I think as we evolve and we realize that that doesn't even get you everything that you wanted and that you can do more good with what you're creating, I think that's when we start leaning towards that sort of like doing good with it and having that sort of passion to it.
Yeah, I think you're right for the most part. I think generationally, it's a little bit different. Like my generation, so I'm 38, we were pretty money focused. I think the generation ahead of me was really, really money focused. And I think we're sort of slowly getting into like a lot of millennials entrepreneurs I meet that are in their, you know, like low 20s, mid 20s are actually like right out the gate are like, yeah, we want to make money. We understand money is important to the company succeeding, but we've also got this mission and check it out. It's really amazing. We're going to change the freaking world. And I feel like they're getting a little bit wiser earlier in life.
That's true.
And I was right. Really encouraging to see, as long as they get the part about the profits and the purpose, right? Because if you're just too focused on passion and too focused on purpose, I've seen a lot of those entrepreneurs as well kind of struggle because they almost feel like guilty or wrong for making money. You know, they've taken it a little too far and you can't feel guilty about making money. You have to be focused on a profitable business model or you just won't survive. And so I think the people that have the balance of both of those can do really well.
Yeah. So at the beginning, John, you told me that your one thing is resilience. It's your resilience to just continue through all the hard times, the ups and downs. Now, we know that knowing your strengths is super important in business, but I think there's two sides to that. So is there, or could you tell me something, John, that you were absolutely not good at in your business?
There's a lot of things where to start. I mean, for one, I don't know how to code. and I run technology companies that rely entirely on code. So I think that, and that's always been the case. I mean, for my very first company was they've kind of all been internet tech based. You know, I didn't know how to build a website. I used this product called Dreamweaver back in like the late 90s. It built the worst website ever on the face of this planet. It was ugly and didn't function well. And I learned, you know, really early on, like that's just something I'm just not going to be good at. But you know, finding somebody who was really good at that took me a long time. My first company had like a sort of average developer. My second company, we outsourced a lot of our development, which is a big mistake, I think, overseas. The quality just wasn't quite there. We had a lot of near-death experiences where our code base almost put us out of business. And then finally, I found a great CTO, I want to say like 10 or 11 years ago, and he's been with me ever since. So I think, you know, I was really bad at that and finding somebody who's really good at that. I'm also really terrible at accounting, although I'm getting better. You know, back in the day, I used to try to run my own, you know, balance sheet in QuickBooks when I just got my first company started. And I thought, you know, assets were good and liabilities were bad. I didn't really know that, you know, they were supposed to balance out at the end of it. So, you know, there's some real basic fundamental stuff on lots of different department, you know, different areas of the company that I just had to find people who are really good. Same thing with my CFO, who now does obviously our accounting and finance. I met him, I want to say 13 or 14 years ago, and he's been with me ever since, kind of bumping around on each of the companies. So lots of skills like that I just don't have that you just got to find great people to complement the skills that you do have.
Yeah. And I love how sounds like you keep people around from company to company. Because I mean, honestly, John, going through your LinkedIn, I mean, there's a stack of companies you've started. So I'm also wondering, like from early on, like I believe with like eHeaven or something, when you started in like January 2000 until now, I think there's been four or five or six companies in there. Would you say that I see that you're co-founder and CEO of most of them, but would you say that like in each company, you sort of realize a couple more things that you shouldn't have control of? And when you start the next company, those are automatically delegated?
Yeah, I do. And I think for me, as I continue to add like another company and then start another company, I was able to take it did get a little bit easier, at least to start the companies, because I had people that I had formed relationships with who were really good at all the different elements, right? And I'd also met a lot of people who were well-networked, who could find me people who were good at the different stuff. So as my network grew over the years, it really did get easier to get the right people in sooner. And also, I developed a fundraising skill set. So my first two companies were all bootstrapped. And I had no idea, you know, how to raise money. And I just used credit cards and destroyed my credit in the process, but got, you know, some companies up and running. And, you know, when I sold the second one, no, you don't care about credit anymore. So it all kind of worked out. But then I started raising money in my third company. And now fundraising is something I really enjoy. And it's something that I have to be responsible for at the company, because I'm probably the best at it at the company. So it gets more sort of systematized, where I'm like, okay, Frank, you're going to handle finance. Jared, you're going to handle CTO. I'm going to go out and raise the Series A. As soon as we raise the Series A, we're going to go hire a VP of sales. We don't have anybody good at VP of sales, you know, in this new business we're creating. But you know what? Let's go talk to the, you know, this recruiter buddy I've got of mine, or this lawyer friend who seems to know everybody, and let's see like what they've got going on. And so it just becomes a lot more organized. It happens faster. I think you get up and running faster. By Mogul, which was my fourth company, we raised $2.5 million pre-product launch, and then 9 months later raised another $12 million and already had like 60 or 70 employees, you know, 9 months after launch. My first, you know, companies took me 4 years to get to 60 employees, and, you know, and it was all bootstrapped and such. So I think it just gets a little faster, and you develop skills, you develop networks that make you more efficient as an entrepreneur, which is a nice benefit of being in the game for a long time.
Yeah. Exactly. So let's talk projects if we can now, John. I mean, it could be projects as in literally like new businesses that you come up with because you've started a lot of them, or it could be within Empire, maybe a new product or a new customer acquisition strategy, whatever it happens to be. A project, I'm sure ideas and are brought to you and come to you and are emailed to you and everything. But I would love to know the process that you go through, and whether that's just like a gut process or you have a written process. But what's the process that you go through today to decide when a new project is worth your time, energy, and resources?
Yep. So for one, I'm the type of entrepreneur that likes to focus on one thing at a time. So even though I've had five businesses, really four, but the fourth one has now got a new name, so we'll call it the fifth. You know, every single one of those, I was just focused on that business at that time. And, you know, each of them sort of lasted like 4 or 5 years before we either A, sold them, or B, pivoted them to a better model. You know, things change so fast nowadays that that's been kind of the cycle I've seen. I haven't been fortunate enough to have an idea that was as a long-term as like a Facebook or something like that. Would be pretty cool. One of these days, maybe we'll see. But in the businesses I have worked on, I always focus on one business at a time. And then inside of that, when it comes down to projects, that's a great question. It's hard to know if a project's going to bear fruit or not. We try not to focus on too many projects within the organization. And I think just incredibly good organization around testing a project has been one of the things that's really been helpful for us. So what we do is, and this has kind of evolved over time as well, but what we do today is we use Asana as a project management system. And we use a framework of executing on the project, which I call the GREAT framework. And it's actually on my blog at johncarter.com. I think it's the latest post. Each one of those letters, GREAT, stands for a different piece of sort of a really good operation plan for testing out a new idea or completing a project. And it starts with the G, which is setting really, really good goals. Goals can't be like, we want to improve or something like that. They've got to have, we want to go from X, which is where we are today, to Y by, you know, Z date. So you've got to have where you are today, what you want to take it to, and then what's the date that you want to achieve that by. And it sort of goes through each of the processes, and I won't take up all the time today unless you want me to, but it really keeps the project organized in a way that kind of forces you through the process. And usually within a month under the GREAT framework, maybe 2 months, we can tell if this project is going to be something that we want to put more resources on and is going to bear fruit, or potentially we completed the whole project and it worked and it's, you know, it's sort of done. So it has a quick time frame because you have to, once you have the goals in place, you have to start a regular meeting cadence. So it's a meeting once a week or it's a meeting twice a week, depending on how urgent everything is. And then inside that meeting cadence, you've got a really good structure for the meeting that basically sucks out all of the good tasks that need to be worked on. Every task has somebody assigned to it with a due date. So there's complete accountability and transparency when things are going to get done and what needs to get done. And then you just, whenever you have a task that needs to get done, you just got to put it in your calendar, a time to work on it, no matter what, you know, and if you do those things, things tend to get done and you can make, you know, it's either an idea that you're vetting out or a project you need to execute on. But either way, I think that framework really works really well. And that's been, like I said, an evolution. Like I've always been missing one part of that sort of throughout my entrepreneurial career. And it wasn't until I got all five of the steps in place that we're now starting to operate at a real true, you know, sort of world-class level.
Right. I like it. I like it a lot. I actually read this on your blog over the weekend. And so just to summarize, the GREAT framework is, the first one is goal, then reporting, then evaluate, then agenda, then take care of business. I will link to that though in the show notes for everyone so you can give it a full read. But I admire your sort of focus. I admire the focus on one business, especially as like a serial entrepreneur, and the focus on one business, but then also focusing on not starting too many projects within that business. It seems to be what's really kind of pushed you and your team to be able to do the things that you do.
It is. And I think it comes to just my strengths, like the fact that I have strengths of raising money. I think I've got some operational strengths. I've got some cultural strengths in the company, you know, building good company culture. Those things all lend themselves really well to sort of one business at a time. Because you don't want to raise $40 million in venture capital like we have at Empire and then be working on two or three other companies. Pretty sure the VCs wouldn't like that. And in general, that just probably wouldn't fly. But take Richard Branson, for example. He's got 400 businesses now. And I got a lot of friends that have 10 or 12 businesses all sort of going at the same time. Their skill sets are very different. They're really good at recruiting people and sort of managing people from sort of a high level, and they don't get too involved in the day-to-day operations. And that can work as well. Like you said earlier, there's a lot of different ways to skin a cat. I think it comes down to, for me, these, my strengths play really well in a sort of focus one business at a time type model. So I guess if you're going to go into it, it's more like a Steve Jobs and a Richard Branson, because those two are so very different, but both successful to the point of huge impact in $4 or $5 billion in net worth.
Exactly. All right, John, this has been, it's been an absolute blast. I want to wrap up on one final question for you, if I can.
Sure.
It's this idea I'm working with calling the entrepreneurial gap. So you've been at this game a long time, but talking to over 300 people now on this show, there seems to be this gap where no matter what you accomplish, from the outside, you can look really successful and like you're accomplishing a ton. Yet oftentimes, personally, from the inside, we always project our successes into the future. So meaning in 1 month when you hit that revenue metric, in 6 months when you get to hit that metric of donations to charitable organizations, whatever it happens to be, John, you and I both know that no matter what goal you set, seconds before you hit it, there's going to be 5 or 10 bigger ones into the future. And so we end up sometimes in this gap where we just never see ourselves as successful. So I would love it right now, John, if you could stop, turn around, and look behind you. You've been at this game for a long time. I'm sure there's been a lot of wins, a lot of losses, a lot of highs, a lot of lows. But can you tell me how you feel about this whole journey up until today?
That's really interesting. I think up until today, I wouldn't change a thing. Life was very, very tough getting started. At my first company, I ate Top Ramen literally every meal, maybe a hot dog a week or a mac and cheese a week, but everything else was Top Ramen for the first, I want to say 3 or 4 years, and it sucked. But it was awesome all at the same time because I was learning so much and I was so excited that I was doing my own thing and going to start a business and stuff like that. So I look back on those times, like, I don't know if I could do that today, like go from where I'm at today back to eating Top Ramen. It would be really, really hard because I think you get accustomed to it. But I think the way that it just sort of all evolved, it almost seems like it was part of a plan to get me to where I am today. And I hope that that kind of plan continues to where the impact level gets bigger and bigger and bigger, because so far it's been that way. But so much blood, sweat, and tears along the way. I mean, it's crazy, the ups and downs and the roller coaster rides. But looking back on that, like at the time I would have said, no, give me money now and make my life a lot easier. Like give me a whole bunch of people working for me and a bunch of capital I can deploy. I remember thinking like, if I had $1 million, what I could do with that? You know, here we are at the current company, we've raised $40 million and I've got to raise another 20, you know, in the next 6 months. Like it's just, it's all relative. I think it's all part of the plan. I think even though those early days are tough, they can be some of the most enjoyable. And I think ultimately the way that I've stayed happy through all of those times, now, which you might consider to be a little easier because I've got capital to deploy and really good people. The happiness has always existed there because of, again, that big sort of why and that big sort of vision or mission I have for myself in life. So that's helped. That's kept me on the true north, thankfully. And you're absolutely right. I have tons of goals I want to accomplish. And I feel like I'm just getting started. And I feel like I have so much to learn and, you know, just sort of warming up. So I don't look back a lot, but thanks for making me do that. Because, yeah, probably should, because it's been a pretty cool ride.
Thanks. Yeah, we don't actually look back enough, I think. And so, and as much as you are, I'm excited to see where you take it from here on as well. But just for that couple of minutes, I like to stop. So we've talked about your business, your current business in passing, sort of, John, Empire. Could you tell people what it's for? Is it for like local service providers, like CrossFit gym owners, restaurant, coffee shop owners? I'm not sure, but could you sort of specifically tell who should go check out Empire?
Yeah, sure. So a couple different groups of people, anybody that owns a local sort of small or medium sized business, like a gym, a restaurant, a gas station, grocery store, on the sort of small level, great product, you'll sign up and you don't do any work. We kind of take an offer, you create an offer, let's call it like, I don't know, 10% cash back, and we'll distribute it for you all over the internet. So you'll go on sites like Yelp and be marketed there. You'll be marketed on airline points programs, on bank cash back programs, sort of all over the place. And people on those sites, consumers will link up their card, come in and buy from you, and you'll only pay when an actual sale happens. So it's marketing, but marketing basically where you're paying for revenue. We actually call it CPR, cost per revenue. So if you have a local, small, medium-sized business, go to Empire and send us an a little sort of quote request and we'll get in contact with you. If you're a big national brand, like a Whole Foods, Shell, Rite Aid, et cetera, we also have great programs for the national guys as well. So we catered really to both. Basically, anybody that has a physical store can benefit from this platform, because that's what we're all about, is driving traffic into physical stores and tracking if you have people using, you know, any debit or credit card. And then I'd say the last party is if you have a website or app that has a lot of consumers. We're trying to look for companies that have a pretty decent amount of consumers, like a million or more is typically who we're working with. But sometimes we make exceptions when we see that the company has a really good plan to get to a million consumers. And for the websites or apps, this is a really killer product to offer to your consumers. I mean, we just did a little thing on Yelp where we went through all the reviews and looked at all the people that were talking about Yelp Cashback. And all the consumer reviews were like amazing. They're like, I love this product. Easiest thing I've ever used. Thank you, Yelp. Love you for this. Like, love was used over and over again from the consumer. So the consumer side just is absolutely in love with the product. So you can give that to your consumers under your brand if you own a website or app. And you actually make a few percentage points off every transaction. So it actually can generate, you know, real revenue, significant revenue for any of the companies that have a good amount of consumers. So benefit consumer, make some cash. Go check out Empire. And it's spelled a little funky. It's Empire, EMPYR.com.
Very cool. Empire.com. JohnCarter.com is John's personal blog and website. I'll link to both those in the show notes, as well as Asana you talked about is the project management tool that you use.
Yeah.
And the Great Framework blog post again. And John is also on Twitter if you want to follow him over there at John Carter. Yep. John, once again, thanks so much for taking the time to join me. Thanks for sharing so openly. And I don't know, man, please just keep doing what you're doing because it's awesome to watch.
Thanks, John. Thanks for having me on the show and love what you're up to as well. So you keep doing what you're doing.
I'd like to thank today's sponsor, DesignCrowd.com. DesignCrowd is a website that helps entrepreneurs and small businesses outsource or crowdsource custom graphic, logo, and web design from designers around the world. DesignCrowd has more than 550,000 designers from over 100 countries ready to help you with any creative and design projects that you might have. Go right now and check out designcrowd.com/hack. That's designcrowd.com/hack for a very special VIP offer for Hack the Entrepreneur listeners only. John, thank you so much. That was a lot of fun. I really, 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 really enjoyed that. Enjoy your story and your insights into 17 years of entrepreneurship. It's very cool seeing you sort of, I guess, sticking it out, but also like talking about your pivots and sort of putting businesses down, starting new ones up, and sort of just this ever-evolving process of entrepreneurship it's fascinating to me. So I really, truly do appreciate it. And now we've reached that point in the show that I enjoy so much. That point where I get to go back and I get to listen to the conversation like you do. As a third person, sit down and listen to the conversation between John and I. So I went back and I listened. And then I went back and I listened to the conversation again. And then I went back and I listened again. That third time through the conversation, there was something I had missed that John had said. I don't know how I missed it, but I had missed it. And then it was so clear when I heard it. It was so very, very clear when John said it. It was that one thing. Did you get it? Did you hear it? Let's do it. Let's find the hack.
I actually really love the process of building companies. And why do I love that? And I kind of dug in a little deeper and it was like, well, because I feel like I'm fairly decent at it. I've got some talent, but I'm developing that talent. And as I develop it and I get better and better, that makes me feel really fulfilled. And then I dug a little deeper. Why does that make me fulfilled? Because the impact that starts to create on the people around me, the world, the people, my team members that I hire, the customers that we work with, et cetera. So it really all, when you kind of boil it down, comes down to that impact. And I sort of made this decision, like sitting on the beach in the middle of nowhere in Indonesia, that like, wow, that's what makes me happy.
And that's the hack. John, John, John. I love this. I love you're like, I actually love the process of building businesses. And it was this process you went through in Indonesia, which I mean, it could be anywhere that you can go through this process. But I love this for two reasons. I love the fact that you found your purpose and what makes you happy. And now you can use that to drive you. Because otherwise, no matter what we accomplish, no matter what we build, no matter how it succeeds or how it does, if we don't know what makes us happy, then really what's the purpose of it? And so this is a really crucial thing. And so I urge you, to out there to do this as John has done it. And I love the way he did it. So he didn't go through the five whys, but this is a famous way they run processes and management. It started in the Toyota company, the five whys. And it's literally, so I mean, you can do four, but five is what they found to get to the true answer of the true answer of the question that you think you're asking yourself, which was, he was like, so what do I love sort of like building the business, but why do you love building the businesses? And then it was like to help people. And it's like, but why do you love? And so it's asking yourself sort of what makes you happy. Or if you think something makes you happy, think about what that is that makes you happy and is driving you, and then ask why. When you come to the solution of that, then ask yourself why that solution, and then why, and then why, and then why. This five whys, look it up. It's on Wikipedia. It's all over the place. It's a really powerful sort of process to go through, not just when like it was invented for to sort out the assembly lines and how to make manufacturing more efficient, but it's really, really, really powerful and a profound process to go through for yourself to see what it is that drives you, to see what it is that's pushing you to where you want to go. Because if you don't know that, then unfortunately you never know if you'll ever even end up there. John, thank you so very, very much. All right. Well, that was fun. Hacktheentrepreneur.com is the site. I'm going to get the show notes over there of John for you. A link to Empire, the guest framework article he wrote about Asana, which is a great project management. If you haven't checked it out, you can use it completely free. It's made by one of the original people from the Facebook team. So there's a lot of money turned into this great project management tool that I use every day in Hack the Entrepreneur. And you should check it out if you haven't, because John mentioned it and so many of my guests have mentioned it. Mostly, I think, because we can use it for free and it works really, really, really well. But anyways, I'll put it over there for you to check out. JohnCarter.com is his site and empire.com is the business. It'll all be there for you when you're ready. All right. Thank you so much for joining me. I really, truly do appreciate it. And please, until next time, keep hacking the entrepreneur.